Okay, we don't have so much time. So let's do a short vort. I don't usually do vorts, but let's do a vort for once in a while. I was talking about it with John last week, so I might as well. Rashi starts off the parsha. Vayishma Yitro Chohen Midyan. And he comes to whatever, to be involved in Torah, to be involved in Klal Yisrael, whatever exactly he's doing. And Rashi says, Mashmo Shamashe Uba. What did he hear that he came? Kriyat Yamsuf Milchemet Amalek. And he heard the splitting of the sea and Milchemet Amalek. Now, this is a bit strange. I guess this is from Chazal, but it's a bit strange. And this is an idea from a neighbor of mine. Always loved this idea, and he liked quoting it all the time. So I'll say it. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz in the Sichos Musar says, "I don't understand. I just don't get it. If Kriyat Yamsuf doesn't convince you to come and accept the Torah, then Milchemet Amalek definitely is not convincing you to come. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, we've already talked about last week, a Kriyat Yamsuf was beyond, above and beyond the 10 Makot. The whole world heard. This is Pshat, right? Pshat of Az Yashir is that it was Kriyat Yamsuf and not the 10 Makot that instilled fear in faraway nations. That was the precursor to the battle in Eretz Yisrael. It was earth-shattering. Milchemet Amalek. So the Jews won in battle. Like, that happens. People win in battles all the time. And it wasn't even like it was a miraculous... I mean, they won, sure. But it wasn't like a super miraculous one. Moshe's hands went up, they won. They went down, they didn't. No one necessarily knew that. Which means that it was like a normal battle. Right? What Chazal are telling you, right, when they... So really what the Pesukim are telling you, and then Chazal read into what it's based on, they're saying that if you an outsider looked at it, it would look like a normal battle. There were ups, there were downs. Right? Whether it was Moshe's hands, whether it was their Amuna, whatever it is, the point is, looking from the outside, Milchemet Amalek is not like such a big deal. So, if Kriyat Yamsuf didn't help, and Kriyat Yamsuf wasn't sufficient, so then what exactly is Milchemet Amalek adding? So, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz has this nice vort. And, you know, in general, vorts, they're good vorts and they're bad vorts. It's not necessarily pshat, but it's definitely pshat in life. Whether or not it's pshat in the psukim. Or the midrash. Though it might be, for all I know. And he said as follows. And there are, like, different ways you could say that. He said, look, Milchemet Amalek taught something fundamentally different than Kriyat Yamsuf. Kriyat Yamsuf taught God is one, God is powerful, God is awesome. But the whole world, like, didn't then convert. They didn't accept God. They heard about it and they were just scared, but they didn't do anything about it. Ad kidei kach, that no one did anything about it, that Amalek, just a little bit after Kriyat Yamsuf, comes and fights the Jewish people. It's as if the inspiration has evaporated. So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says, you know what Yisro learned from Milchemet Amalek? It wasn't he was impressed by Milchemet Amalek. It was that he realized that inspiration, as great as it is, and as great as that which brought the inspiration about is, if you don't capitalize on it, it is worthless and will dissipate as quickly as it came. And therefore, what he learned from Milchemet Amalek was, if I don't come now, then I'm never going to come. Because, right, he watched Amalek in just a few moments lose whatever inspiration, fear of God they had, and fight the Jewish people. Now, if you read John's Dvar Torah last week, his alumni Dvar Torah, right, he quoted the same thing from Rabbi Reuven Mann on last week's Parsha. Right, to be fair, again, whether it's shot in any given story, I think it is one of the messages that goes through Chumash. So his Dvar Torah for my man, I haven't read it inside, but I edited his Dvar Torah, so now I've read it. Is that last week you see the exact same thing? Right, the Jews are all inspired by Aminu Bashem Moshe Avdo, and then they're complaining. The inspiration just dissipates. It just disappears. Now, there may be more subtle theological things going on, and I think there are, and I gave Shira on this on Thursday, in Ephrat. But without getting to the deep complexities of it, it's clear they were inspired, and yet a few days later they're complaining about God. Ad kidei kach, that Moshe says, if you don't do something, they're going to kill me. Right? Like, Vayaminu Bashem Moshe Avdo has gotten to the point where Moshe said they're about to kill me. Right? Like, that's just pshat, that inspiration dissipates. And if you don't capitalize, and even if... Now, right, man took it slightly differently. He said, you know, this was sort of kidarko, was that, you know, inspiration is emotional, and if you don't back it up with intellect, it will fade. Right, man. And John wrote it in his Tractara last week, so I'm taking his word that that's what he says.
Right?
Right, but that's what he says, right? That emotions, right? Emotions can be fleeting. Intellect isn't, and if it wasn't reflective, so then now I'm not sure that's true. I'm not sure the Jews were not reflective. I'm not sure there wasn't a substantive belief in God. But that doesn't change the fact that inspiration only takes you so far. Where if you don't capitalize and you aren't constantly actively trying to integrate into your life, in a harami. Yeah, and again, that's pshat. This is not like drash, right? This is definitely pshat and chet ha'egel, right? Again, whatever exactly precipitated chet ha'egel, the fact is that the Jews went in kama yamim from accepting the Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to chet ha'egel. So again, whether this is pshat in any given story, or this is pshat in Rashi, I'm not 100% sure. But I don't think you can read B'shalach, Yisro, Kitisa, right, or pretty much anything in Torah, right, without recognizing that at some level this is true, that the Torah wants to remind you that inspiration is, you know, is fleeting if you don't do something about it. Right? The way, I think this might also be Ruchaim Shalevitz, but otherwise it's the Balei Musar, right? The Balei Musar loved this line, which is that the Midrashim say that Ra Shivcha Alayam, Masher Lo Ra Yechezkel Ben Buzi B'maseh Merkava. Rashi just quotes it, Masher Lo Ra Neviim. So then why is Yechezkel such a big deal? Right? If every Shivcha Alayam saw it, and then Kal Vachomer in this week's Parsha, they have Matan Torah, right? Like Kal Vachomer Ben Menoshel Kal Vachomer, right? They saw something, so why don't we remember every Shivcha Alayam the way we remember Yechezkel Ben Buzi? So the way the Balei Musar say it is because Yechezkel was Yechezkel Hanafi, and the Shivcha remained the Shivcha. Right? She may have had an experience of inspiration, but before that she was the Shivcha, and after that she remained the Shivcha. It didn't transform her into, you know, someone of Yechezkel's stature. Right? It's not about how inspired you are. It's not how lucky you are in terms of the experiences you have. It's what you do with them. So again, I don't know whether that's pshat in any given story. It's, as Bednarsh likes saying, sometimes the drash on the drash is omek pshuto shel Torah, right? Like, again, I don't know whether it's shot in any given story, but I don't think you can read Chumash and see the constant failure of the Jews of the Dordea, who saw God, who consistently, no matter what happens, doesn't matter Kriyas Yom Tov, doesn't matter Matan Torah, are failing to understand that that's one of the central messages of Torah, that inspiration by itself doesn't do you much unless you capitalize it, and even if you capitalize on it, it could still dissipate. Right? It's a constant struggle. And again, that's pshat in life, whether it's pshat in any given story.